Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 20, so we've had a solid 20 or so weeks of this. That's a nice round number, isn't it?
It is. Almost 5 months, I guess. Not really, but almost.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Good. It's been a slow week, but it picked up towards the end, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's been a bit slow, but yeah, I think we're finally starting to get a little bit of a taste of Pixel season. Well, not just Pixel season, but made by Google season. We had really a lot of news going on, a lot of stories in the month leading up to and during I.O., and then we had a slow summer, but it's starting to pick up again, and next month is probably going to be one of our biggest months of the year, as is usual for most, I'd say probably most tech blogs. September, October are the big months.
Mm-hmm.
But today we're going to talk a little bit about a lot of topics. We're pretty much going to cover the entire spectrum since there wasn't really anything this week that was particularly notable. There's a lot of little, smaller, interesting things that happened this week. We're going to talk a little bit about just Google hardware, Pixel 2, Pixel 3. We're going to touch on Android P a little bit again. We're going to talk about other software platforms, Chrome OS, Wear OS. And then there were some material theme updates, as there have been pretty much, I mean, it seems like we're doing a story, you know, every day or every other day with material theme redesigns ever since I.O. or even before I.O. So yeah, that's been a long-standing continuing story that's been evolving. So I guess we could just talk with, start with the supposed Google-made smart display. So a little bit of background on this goes back to April. Well, I guess you could say it goes back to January when Google announced, or Google and their partners announced some third-party displays. Lenovo did one, JBL did one. And obviously the rumor was, you know, is Google going to do their own? Because a lot of these other platforms, Google has made their own hardware for. And smart displays is one that we have yet to see Google's own hardware for. And then April came around, and an interview that Rishi Chandra did, he said that he was asked if Google was going to be doing a smart display. And he said he was not going to say that they're not going to do one. So a little bit of a double negative there. So we don't know whether they're doing one, but the latest report is this comes out from a major Japanese newspaper that Google is indeed doing their own smart display, and it's launching later this year.
So yeah, the report came from Nikkei over in Japan, and it's sparse on details, but it just says that Google is making its own smart display. They generically referred it to as a smart speaker with a display.
Smart speaker with a display. They don't even call it a smart display.
No, they don't. And their framing was very interestingly Google versus Amazon and the Echo Show, which I'm not sure about you, but I don't think that's found much success, even in the U.S., so it's available.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no clue on the numbers there, and I'm not really, I don't know, I don't follow Amazon that closely, but I will say it's probably being held back a little bit by the fact that there's no YouTube on it.
Oh, yeah. Great competitive advantage.
Yeah. So that's one thing that Google will have over the Echo Show is YouTube.
It's actually, funnily enough, back at the end of last year, there was the rumor about Google making their own smart displays. We got it, TechCrunch got it.
And right.
This device. Yeah. And looking back at all that, and the most interesting thing that stood out was no Netflix. They said that there wouldn't be any Netflix.
And
like 8 months later, a year later, that however many months later, Netflix is still not available on this Lenovo smart display. It's like an interesting competition from a competition standpoint, and why Netflix isn't allowing them to do it, because Netflix works with everybody usually. Well, it's not on Amazon's Echo Show, but this is a bit surprising that Google still hasn't gotten Netflix on board From the like the technical implementation, Netflix, it's cast a smart display just needs to cast something, but it's on the first Lenovo smart display release, it's not allowed. Netflix isn't allowed to launch, isn't allowed to be streamed, to stream to the smart display. So that's a minor odd point.
Yeah,
again,
so
as you said, YouTube.
Yeah, and just so that people are aware, I actually forgot about this until just now, but this was supposedly codenamed Manhattan. This was a tip that we received anonymously, and TechCrunch also received. Apparently, TechCrunch got some kind of confirmation on it because either that or they felt more confident in it than we did. But they ran the story based purely on the tip, and then we ran it saying, yeah, we also got it, and we pasted the actual text from the anonymous tip. Whereas TechCrunch didn't. So that's how they knew, you know, they weren't the only ones that got it. But it said that it was actually coming out of the midst of this drama with Google pulling YouTube from the Echo Show. And the tip said that it would be the same size as the Echo Show, or roughly the same screen size. It would have YouTube, Google Assistant, Google Photos, Netflix, video calling. It will control Nest and other smart home devices. Google killed two other products with larger screens that would have competed with TVs, which is weird. And then it says Google would launch the device, Google will launch the device to compete with Echo Dot. I think they meant Echo, or the a device to compete with Echo Dot. I don't remember. I don't remember exactly what the context of that was. But they also added there was tremendous pressure to launch last year. And they said might get delayed, teething troubles about planning and configuration. Mid-size screen was dropped first, then a larger screen, and now there's just the 7-inch model. That's a lot of weird, you know, mixed information there. And then there was other information that we received later, which kind of like contradicted some of that. So it's all really muddy right now. And it seemed like, I don't know, that leak was... It seemed planted, or it seemed staged, or something. I don't know.
The first leak definitely seemed as like a, I wouldn't say a sign of desperation in light of the Echo Show, maybe in light of Amazon getting to market first. But as I said at the top of the show, it doesn't really seem that Amazon is making a difference with that. All you're hearing about right now is still the smart speakers, the Echo Dots and the new Echo 2 or something. Like at the end of the day, like Google might have been raped by a year, but it got them to a more polished device, seemingly a better designed operating system and experience powered by Android things. And going into this holiday season, according to Nikkei, they're planning to ship 300 million units in a very ambitious push for this. So this for Google, like I think we're starting to see what the hardware season and the entering the holiday season, especially what they're trying to deliver here. And smart displays from this seems like a very big part.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting to me is that Rishi Chandra is also asked in that interview in April. I don't remember, was it Vanity Fair or Fast Company? I don't remember. But it was like they asked him why was Google launching with partners first? And he said that it was a quote matter of timing. And so I've been thinking about like why would they launch the device with, you know, partners first in several months. So like as we just mentioned, that original tip about Manhattan, it said that there was intense pressure for Google to release a smart display to kind of take on the Echo Show, or internal pressure, I'm assuming, to take on, to, you know, have Google in a position where they could take on the Echo Show. And I guess perhaps maybe what happened is that they knew that their first party offering was not going to be ready yet. And so maybe the idea was to just push these third party offerings out as fast as possible, so that Google could start to take on the Echo Show. But as you mentioned, the Echo Show doesn't seem like it's a super intensely popular product. I mean, we saw at Prime Day that Amazon cut it like, I don't know, like 40% off or something like that. Yeah. So it's not selling like hotcakes. And then the other thing was, you know, maybe Google used that as kind of an incentive to get those partners on board, like Lenovo and JBL, to get them on board actually building hardware it might have been an incentive like, well, we'll let you have like a 9 month, like a 9 month exclusive before we compete with you.
No, I completely agree with that right now. Well, the read ended up only being a few months, depending on when Google's thing launches. But if we look at smart speakers, what people know are the Google Home. There are many small companies, small and big companies, that have launched assistant-enabled, Google Assistant-enabled smart speakers or whatever.
Right.
And what people are buying is the Google thing. Like, there are some smart speakers that look nicer, that probably have better audio. I know Sony makes a cool one that looks like a HomePod and has an alarm clock. But those aren't selling. And I think at the end of the day, like, Google needed to give these companies an exclusivity period. Otherwise, what is the incentive for them to make their own displays, to make displays for Google?
Right. Yeah, I think you're right that the assistant and Google is really pushing a lot of this hardware, because I think people are starting to know. I think it's starting to become, you know, well known that assistant powered devices are like the best smart devices on the market, and they are really, really smart. I mean, Google's advertisement pushing Google Home devices, the marketing push behind Google Home and behind all this entire assistant platform is huge. And so people are starting to think more about the software side of it. They're starting to think more about assistant than they are thinking about the actual hardware that's being sold. And people don't really care about the hardware as much, in my view, as the fact that it's running assistant. I think that's really catching a lot of people's attention. Back to the smart display, we just wanted to mention, rehash kind of some things that we talked about back in April. We heard, so contrary to the Manhattan rumors, which I'm assuming that was a hardware code name, we heard about a device that would be more like a 10-inch screen. So we heard that Google had a few different possible names for this device. Pixel Slate, that's my favorite one so far, I think. Yeah, Pixel Slate, Pixel Screen. And then other things that we were told were that it would have a lot of things you might expect, like a front-facing camera, two microphones, I guess like dual microphone for like far-field listening, just like the Google Home. And as I mentioned, a screen size that's kind of in line with the larger of the two Lenovo smart displays. And then the other thing that's really interesting about this supposed model is that it would have a standalone battery, which would be a first for the smart display platform. And it's also something we mentioned back when Sean did his first review of the Lenovo smart display. I think he mentioned in his review that having a battery would be really great. And I agree. I think having a battery is one thing that these things are missing. And if Google's going to do it, that will be a pretty good differentiator. So
agreed. Yeah. The form factor plays such an important role in how you're doing a battery. Will there be a charging dock, or the implementation of a battery? And I agree, it would be a nice feature, but like it needs to be well designed here. Also, the crossover with the tablet is like, it's what's a tablet? What's a smart display? Do you want to do you want to use at the end of the day? Do you want to use a smart display, a device that does not have a browser? Because I think a portable device required, the expectation of a portable device is some basic web browser. And with at least smart displays, I think it might be a bit limiting if they're going this direction.
Yeah, another thing that kind of muddies the waters there in terms of like what is a tablet, what is a smart display, is the Pixel Stand rumor. So the Pixel Stand is, we're assuming... a lot of guesses, a lot of educated guesses, but we're assuming it's going to be something that you can plop your Pixel 3 down on and it'll wirelessly charge and turn it into a smart display of sorts. And so, of sorts. Yeah, we're not sure what that would look like. I mean, we've seen other instances where Google has built another software layer on top of Android to let Android be a different platform. The example that comes to mind is Daydream. Daydream is not... You know, it is Android, but it's built on Android, and it lets you use your phone for a purpose that's not, you know, the typical Android UX. So we could potentially see the Pixel Stand situation be the same, where it's like You know, just like it can tell when you put a pixel in a Daydream headset, a Daydream view, it pops you into the Daydream UI. Maybe with the Pixel Stand, it will know that you put your pixel on a Pixel Stand and bring you into
a smart.
I mean, who knows? Google might actually build in the entire smart display UI into into the Pixel, and I think that would be really cool.
It would be cool. It is. Like, what is it? Like, the rumor is 6 inches, at least 6 inches, if we're at least basing on the Pixel 2 XL. They might as well. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, and if you could have Pixel Stands in multiple rooms, and any room you're in, you can just immediately just have a smart display anytime you put your phone down. I think that's brilliant.
We already know that, like, a Pixel Stat from the Google App Leaks teardowns, we already know that it's going to let users act as assistant. And once your Pixel is on a Pixel Stand, you'll unlock and be able to answer all queries, like personal information, replies, text messages, whatnot. So, yeah, it's as are these rumors, and I'm sure there'll be more. We're like a quarter of the way there to like an actual smart display.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Speaking of Pixels, this week we had, growing weariness and just general upsetness among Google Pixel 2 XL owners. Artem, founder of Android Police, was the person who kind of started this little news cycle. But apparently he had a Pixel 2 XL that was just grinding to a halt, which we've seen kind of similar issues with other LG-made hardware in the past. So I guess it's way too early to jump to conclusions, but I guess the initial assumption, since this seems to be affecting people at random and seems to not be affecting everyone, and you know, there's lots of variables. It could be affecting people who have been using their Pixel for so many hours a day for so long. You know, it could be a hardware's wearing out situation. It could be a software thing. We're not sure. But apparently lots of people's Pixel 2 XLs are just grinding to a halt. And Artem's luck seemed to be particularly bad. His device was basically like, you know, taking 10 seconds to open up the camera app or whatever.
Which is unacceptable. Yeah. Absolutely unacceptable.
Absolutely. And this is just one more issue that we've seen with the Pixel 2 XL. I mean, back when it launched, I kind of ashamedly was very outspoken about how bad the display is. And I've kind of backtracked a little bit on my feelings on how bad it is, because partly because I've gotten used to it, and partly because it's not as bad as I thought, or as I kind of expected. Or I guess another aspect is that I did have a worse than average unit, and so we've had some quality control issues. That's what I'm saying. You know, we saw things like that unit that came out of the factory with a little slip inside the box that said it passed quality control or failed quality control, and it still managed to get out into someone's hands. So the Pixel 2 XL is not short on problems, but this is just yet another one. And it seems like lots of people, I mean, Artem's been retweeting people for like all week, basically, about a dozen people. And then MKBHD put out a video also talking about this issue, but it seems to be a different issue to me. It
seems a different issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Like looking at MKBHD's video, he seems to be talking more about just the software slowing down, like Android phones have been known to do, which in my opinion is unacceptable for a Pixel phone, but that's a conversation for another day. And Artem's problem seems to possibly be a hardware problem. So it's a lot of mixed information, but we did hear from a tipster, an anonymous tip, that Google has at this point identified three possible causes of Artem's issues. One of which would require hardware replacements. So presumably there are a couple of scenarios where this doesn't end terribly for Google, and one scenario in which Google just tries to keep this as quiet as they can, and they just generously replace Pixel 2s as they have been since the Pixel 2 XL first launched.
When you were discussing this story yesterday, you brought the point that because of the display issues, Google put out increased the warranty to 2 years. So if they probably accounted for this, at least for the display issues, they probably factored in a lot of replacements by adding one more year into that warranty period. So I think at the end of the day, like users who are the number of users who are seeing this problem, they won't have trouble getting a newer unit that hopefully has the issue fixed.
Yeah, Google's been very generous with Pixel 2 XLs. I mean, with the display, they were, I mean, I think they got to the point where if you contacted support and said, I'm not happy with the display, they literally just sent you another unit just because they, you know, they're just being, I think it's really good to see because we've seen kind of mixed responses in the past with, you know, other Nexus phones not lasting so long or having issues and Google not being super fast to replace them or whatever. So it's been good to see how quickly they've responded to the Pixel 2 XL issues. One thing of note, though, is that as it does seem like this is kind of, you know, there's just as many people who are reporting that their Pixel 2 XLs are perfectly fine. Actually, there's probably way more people because the people who aren't having issues are not talking about it. The ones who are having issues are jumping on Twitter. So I would say that this is probably, I would probably be wise to say that this is a very, very small issue. And so, you know, let's not blow it out of proportion. However, Google did send a PR person and an engineer to Artem's house to retrieve the device. And so it seems like Google's, you know, taking it seriously and they're being proactive, which is, I guess, all you can ask for beyond just these things not happening in the first place.
I haven't had any issues. Nobody on our team has had issues with their Pixel 2 XLs. But I just want to add about that for the people who are having this issue, this is, again, like I said, unacceptable, especially with the camera. Like the fact that they're advertising the Pixel as a camera device and it taking 10 seconds, which is a common theme between all these complaints, that slow to launch the camera and impacted video as a result of that lagginess. I think for those people who are affected by it, it is a notable problem.
Yeah, I agree. In other Pixel stories, the Pixel 3 XL, we've as I mentioned, we've covered this pretty much every week, but there's another leak, yet another leak this week. And this one comes by way of Mobile Syrup, Canadian tech publication. And they shared a photo on Twitter. I guess they didn't feel confident enough to, or they didn't care enough to turn it into its own report, but they shared this photo on Twitter that one of their readers sent in. Supposedly, to me, it looks like public transit or an airplane or something. It's a photo of a spy shot, just of someone, presumably a Googler, using the Pixel 3 XL in public. And it's pretty surefire for real. So it's got that big notch. And the big chin, and Pixel 3 XL. This is exactly. Here it is. This is the Pixel 3 XL.
What I'm so much more curious is why the Pixel 3 hasn't leaked.
Like, yeah,
there's I don't know about that smaller phone.
Yeah, the theories last year were easy because it was like, okay, one's being manufactured by HTC and one's being manufactured by LG, and so they have different, you know, development cycles and different people overseeing their manufacturing. And so different levels of security. So one leaking more than the other would, you know, not be so surprising. Mm-hmm. But this year, supposedly Google's manufacturing them all with Foxconn. So there should be really no reason that we're not seeing the smaller one, except for the fact that surely the more popular one to be tested or for these Googlers to be testing with and to be using in their daily life would be the XL. Right? When you say that,
when they push, like in the, they're still mostly, Google is still mostly pushing the Pixel 2 XL to this day.
Right.
Maybe it's because the Pixel 2 XL looks, I mean, the regular Pixel 2 looks old and a bit ugly.
But right.
I guess we'll see with this with the upcoming generation, if both of the if at least the Pixel 3 looks a tiny bit more modern, if they're going to be to more equally push devices and give the same amount of advertising.
Yeah, I think on the marketing advertising side of thing, I think it's going to be the same story this year, but it is very different from last year in leaks. Last year, it was like, it was almost like the Pixel 2 XL was like being, you know, closely watched, and Google wasn't letting, or actually, I think I was told by a source, I don't remember, but I'll just say this anyway, that Google was, they were not letting engineers test the 2 XL nearly as widely as the 2. So they were letting basically anyone internally that wanted to test on the 2, they were basically letting them have it. And the XL, they were keeping under wraps for more, I guess, you know, exclusive use case or test cases. This year, though, I mean, and I guess last year it made sense because we were seeing mostly all the leaks up until the last couple months were all of the smaller one. And which was kind of disappointing, you know, because every year the Pixel looks terrible in leaks. The first year we were like, wow, this looks like a phone from 2014. And last year it was like, wow, this phone looks like a phone from 2014. And then the 2 XL ended up being, you know, smaller bezels and rounded corners and didn't look as bad. It looked more modern and, you know, that was reflected in the marketing material too. But yeah, this year 3 XL is just bearing all.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's pretty much all there is to say on that front.
For the moment, at least.
For the moment, yeah. Really, the only thing that's still left open is whether or not there's wireless charging. So
yes, your personal crusade.
Yeah, tips@9to5mac.com if you want to let us know if you have any solid evidence on that besides what we've seen in the source code. And our circumstantial evidence of the back being glass almost certainly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's move on. Android Pi stuff this week. Google detailed more free storage and faster boot in
yes.
the Go edition.
Yeah, so Android Go, well, Go edition, is their big push into emerging markets around the world, and they're going to add more free storage. So for example, an 8 gig phone, if it at the moment running Oreo, has about 5 gigs of free storage for the user. On Pi, they add another 500 megabytes, which is might not seem like a lot, but for the for these markets, every little bit counts of internal storage. We're going to see faster boot and also security features like verified boot, I believe, that's already in Android 9, in Android proper, which basically, as the name suggests, to make sure that your phone is loading the right operating system and hasn't been tampered with. These devices are launching in the fall, so we should see. We're already seeing so many companies launching Go edition phones. Like there's that very big rumor of Samsung possibly joining in the fray, though it is a skinned version and looks basically like TouchWiz as it is. Yeah, that's the Android P news for this week.
Yeah, I don't think there was really much else in that category that's strictly Pi related. Mm-hmm. And then there were a couple Chrome OS things, both related to this long-standing rumor / story / development that Google is working to allow dual booting of Windows 10 on potentially existing Chromebooks, almost certainly future Chromebooks. But yeah, I mean, Campfire was the thing this week.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
So basically, as you said, it allows users to run Windows, which I still don't know why. My best theory is that it's an enterprise play for the enterprises that need to run legacy Windows apps. But besides that, are they going to actually advertise this when they're selling the Pixelbook, the ability to dual boot or any other future Google hardware? I really don't know.
Yeah, I think my take on this is, I think I mentioned this before, but my take on it is I think Google's just taking the same approach that Apple is taking. I mean, what is Apple's motivation for allowing dual boot of Windows on the Mac? And you're right. They don't advertise that. You know, like obviously Apple's first goal is to push macOS on as many people as they can because they want people using their platform. And I think it's easy to assume that Google would do the same. Google wants people using Chrome OS. However, I think there is a subset of users, and that, I mean, most of them live in Silicon Valley, California, which would know whether or not the device can dual boot. And I think that with a Mac, it's kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, people may want a Mac really bad, but they need Windows for whatever reason, because we live in a world that has been widely dominated by Windows for such a long time. And so having that option and knowing, because they're already a techie familiar person, knowing that option is there is opens the door to allow them to get one of the underdog platform. I mean, in terms of desktop operating share, macOS is very much an underdog. Chrome OS is still an underdog. So I think Google's take on it is basically like, you know, I think it'll be a public thing. I don't think it'll be necessarily an enterprise thing. I think it'll be a public thing. But like I said, like you said, I don't think that they're going to advertise it. I think that it's just going to be there. And I think that feature existing is just going to open the door to more customers. And so I think that's probably the motive. I think it's probably a good idea not to overthink it.
I guess another way to see it is like to sell the Pixelbook hardware, depending on whether this is a Chrome OS feature or a Pixelbook feature. But I guess from what we've seen in these, it's being discussed in Chromium, that maybe it's mostly just a Chrome OS level feature versus something maybe advocated for by the Pixelbook team to sell more hardware, to sell their impressive hardware to more users.
I mean, I think there are a lot of people. I think this subset of people that, you know, would love to buy a Pixelbook but might need to dual boot Windows because they just need to have the option to run those more powerful or more enterprise applications or whatever. I think that's probably a pretty significant number of people. I would put myself in that category. Having a Pixelbook and even using it primarily as a Chrome OS device would be more realistic for me, especially if I'm chunking out $1,000 on it. If I know that I have the option to run whatever Windows specific application or enterprise application that I need to on it. And in the Pixelbook's case, it has the hardware to do that. A lot of these Chromebooks, they don't really have the hardware. They most of them have 32 gigs of storage space. There's no way you're going to be running
Adobe Premiere.
Yeah, any Adobe Premiere, all these other enterprise or creative applications, you can't really run them on 32 gigs of storage. But the Pixelbook is kind of an exception to that rule. The Pixelbook is MacBook level or higher end Windows laptop level hardware. But that option to run those applications in a Windows environment is not there as of today. I do think if I were to take a bet, I would bet that, yeah, I mean, they're probably working on this as a Chrome OS level feature, probably preparing for the future. But I would bet that this is being primarily made or being built today, right now, for the Pixelbook. Like you said, I don't think it's going to be something they're going to brag about. It's like, yeah, buy our Pixelbook because it can run Windows. I don't think that's going to be the narrative. The narrative is buy our Pixelbook because it runs Chrome OS, because Chrome OS is awesome, because Chrome OS is actually beating Windows in a lot of ways. It's probably better for you than Windows in a lot of ways. But also, if you need Windows to run Premiere sometimes, we're not going to limit you. And like I said, Pixelbook has the hardware for it. And actually, specifically, we mentioned that Campfire would require, in the code, we saw evidence that it would require 40 gigs at least of storage space for everything in the dual boot image to work properly. And as of today, the Pixelbook is one of the only, if not the only, Chromebook that would fit that requirement. And so that's my take on the whole situation. Would the same apply to you? Do you feel like you're a better candidate for a Pixelbook if you know that you have that option in the background?
If it ran Mac OS, is
my opinion.
I have not used Windows in so long, so maybe that's why I'm not finding as much interest as this as the rest of the world is, or the tech community is. But yeah, because the other thing, I don't know whether Linux, because with Linux apps, which is coming rolling out very soon in beta to the stable channels of Chrome, I think for Google, that is the more optimal, the optimal thing to roll out. Yes, Linux is a developer thing, and I've said that at the before, and we discussed this. But for Google, it's more optimal for them just to make sure Linux can run properly. Linux apps can run, and like for the Linux experience, the virtual machine that runs in the window, they still have the control of the user experience in the Chrome OS, and letting Windows run on it seems to me as such a like, it shows that the open player by letting another operating system run, but at the same time, it seems a bit drastic to me.
Yeah, I guess so. I just don't think that, I think it's going to be kind of a similar situation to the Linux situation in a way. I think, you know, they're not advertising this whole Linux thing really that strongly. I mean, they're not going to be showing images in the marketing material of Chrome OS, Chromebooks running developer IDEs that are built for Linux. You know, that's not something that they're going to advertise. I think Windows will be the same thing. It's like, I think most people probably won't even know unless they're strongly considering buying a $1,000 laptop. And it's just, you know, it's like, it's just that little thing that gets them over the edge to like, I may not even dual boot Windows. That may not even be something I do, but if I need Windows on my $1,000 main computer in the future, that's a, you know, it gets you there. It gets you to that point of like, yes, I can justify $1,000 on the laptop. I think that's my take. Another thing that Kyle reported this week, so our Kyle Bradshaw, primarily known for his Fuchsia reporting, he reported that Pixelbook may be the only current Chromebook to get Windows 10 support. So it seemed, I think the way, I haven't been following the story super closely, but I think the way it's been interpreted so far is that this was something that Google was building for future products, future releases, like a future Pixelbook or, you know, future Chrome OS laptops. But he found evidence that the current generation Pixelbook Eve, which is obviously the laptop that they're testing a lot of this stuff on, may actually, Google may be preparing it to be updated to get Windows 10 support. So that's an interesting thing, and that's good for those who did already shell out, you know, over $1,000 on a Pixelbook. Yeah, that's Chrome OS, I think. You want to move on to Wear OS now?
Yes. So we had some, these past few weeks that we've had many companies like Fossil and within the Fossil Group brand launch new Wear OS devices that are still running the old 2-year-old processor. So getting that out of the way and moving forward, we're starting to hear about what's next on the software front for Wear OS. So Android Police had this report that Google was developing something called Google Coach. It would be this health and fitness assistant, basically, that can help you. It's basically an upgrade to Google Fit. It gives you progress reminders throughout the day of how you're doing. If you miss, it can suggest exercises. And if you miss any, it can schedule new ones for you. But beyond that fitness side, on the health front, it wants to suggest cooking based on where you are and your preferences. It can suggest to you restaurants, healthy restaurants maybe, or if you're one to cook at home, it can suggest meal plans. So, and another thing this Google Coach would do is bundle in notifications so that you're not overloaded with progress reminders and that and other activity. So in a lot of ways, this sounds like the successor to Google Fit that Google badly needs. And I think it paints a good picture, an obvious picture almost, of where Wear OS is going in the future. More machine learning to find patterns to improve your health, which is something that, again, they haven't been doing for the past few months.
Do you think that this is going to be a a big hallmark feature to relaunch Google Fit, or do you think that it will replace Google Fit?
I don't know. It would make sense just to have one app for this to be a complete replacement. But at the same time, I can also see Google Fit remaining as the thing that you visit to find out your stats for the day, to track your exercise, while Google Coach is like this notification layer of almost that is the assistant in the background that provides suggestions. But I think it's a more likely a replacement than Google Fit, because I don't think many people are using it. It could use a rebrand. Google Coach is arguably a better name.
Yeah, it's weird to me. I think it makes, I don't know, I can see both ways. So I could see Google Coach being, you know, like they sticking with Google Fit and they build Google Coach, like all these AI features. That's basically what it is. It's a suite of AI powered features for fitness. And like adding that into Google Fit, but I think from a branding perspective, it might make sense for Google Coach to be like the name of the app or the name of the service, because if you were to build Google Coach into Google Fit, I don't know if that makes sense, because in a lot of apps, it's like, you know, in Wear OS, for instance, your way of interacting with Google is the Google Assistant, and with every platform, the person, the person that you interact with to get those AI powered, you know, googly functionality is the Google Assistant. That's kind of the brand that Google's been building, and to me, Google Coach sounds like another entity. It sounds like there's a Google Assistant, and then Google Assistant has a friend, and the friend is named Google Coach, and Google Coach is the guy who helps you with all of your fitness stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the name, Android Police mentioned that the name is entirely tentative at this point. But to me, it seems like they should just launch relaunch Google Fit, and just say, now it's powered by Google Assistant, and the assistant can do this, the assistant can do that. This is like, what if they just built all these features, you know, on Assistant and just called it Assistant? I don't know. That makes more sense to me, but
yeah, I advocate for that, because as you said, the branding does not make sense to have. People are beginning to know what the Google Assistant is. And there's, according to the AP report, there's this line about how Google Coach could eventually come onto other devices like Android TV or Google Home, and like that confusion.
The problem to me is Google Coach sounds like a person, like my football coach or whatever. And so it's like, there's already a Google person. That person, her name is Assistant, you know? So that's what's kind of confusing to me. And a lot of these things that it supposedly do, like recommend workout routines, that totally sounds like an assistant thing.
And also all these features, all these features already exist in other products.
Right.
Google Calendar actually has this thing where you can say you want to, your goals, you want to exercise more. And if you end up missing it, it can find time in your schedule to another time to exercise. And this thing about finding places you want to eat, that's in Google Maps, which they just promptly launched at I/O. All these features exist in some form or another.
Right.
And all Coach seems to be doing is bringing it under one roof. Now, the question is, why wouldn't you go a step further and bring it under the roof of Assistant, as we both argue for?
Yeah, I guess one thing that I could see this being, though, is maybe they won't frame it as a fitness thing.
That's definitely true.
Maybe they'll frame it as a life coach, like a life coach kind of thing. Health.
That's bold.
Health, that but is, like, I don't know. That's just a long shot. But I mean, that's kind
I see that. It's, in a way, I can see why they don't want Assistant to have that, to have that stigma of like Google expanding to something that's managing your entire life.
Super personal. Yeah.
Yeah. I can see them not wanting to infect the assistant plan in case it goes wrong or people find it creepy.
Right.
Again, I think this is the way of the future. At the end of the day, you want assistants that are good enough to be in every part of your life, not just when you're on your phone or in Google Photos. Everywhere is the end goal of this.
Right. What else do we have? This we had with Wear OS. Oh yeah, the other big thing with Wear OS this week was So Google wants to make Wear OS apps not suck. And the way they're going to do that is by requiring, which they should have done this since day one, but they're now going to require app quality checks to get on the store review process. Yeah.
Yeah. So the goal is that every app that appears on the Play Store version, on the Wear OS version of the Play Store, has to go under review. And these mandatory requirements are so basic. Well, I'm not a developer, but one of them is making sure you have a screenshot of your app, of one screenshot of your Wear OS app.
The bar is not very high.
Because at the moment, the Play Store has so many like phone-sized screenshots on a tiny 1.2-inch display. It's so bad. And to think that this is the experience for a year and a half, I think. This is not good. It hasn't Wear OS and, well, starting with Android Wear 2.0, this hasn't been a good initiative to get Wear OS back in the limelight, if you ask many, I think, and many people would agree with that.
Yeah, I think that it's easy to assume that this initiative, which, interesting, is going to go into effect October 1st, 2018.
Yes.
Might sort of line up with a certain hardware launch. So we don't really know, but the rumor is that Google has, or Evan Blass, you know, pretty reliable guy, says that Google's launching a smartwatch at its event, assumably October. I mean, if we follow the last 2 years' trend, it'll be on October 4th. And it's easy to assume that this move to increase Wear OS app quality is to prepare for a relaunch of Android Wear.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my thoughts on it. That's pretty much all there is.
Yeah. And speaking of the Play Store and apps, we've had quite a few Material Team updates just in these past, especially in these past 2 weeks. So the most significant one, and the one that people, I think, are really enjoying, is the one to Android Messages. So version 3.5 releases the material, adds the material theme that we were able to activate a few months ago. And basically, it just makes the app white, removes the blue app bar, adds Google Sans, but unlike with other Google apps that have underwent the material theme, there is a dark mode to make the app slightly bearable to use at night, which is a thing that people do.
Yeah. What if this is foreshadowing for every other material theme app? That would be nice.
I very much hope so. But yeah, so material theme, a dark mode. In the past, we've enabled a new search that's coming. That's not live yet, but it'll allow you to filter by images and links and locations and whatnot. So that is a coming update to Android Messages. And I guess it shows that Android Messages is getting a lot of love after the whole RCS chat repivot or renewal of focus.
Yeah. Other apps that got material theme this week, didn't get material. Well, yeah, I guess Google Duo some. 38. Yeah, some.
Yes, some material theme. It's interesting that there's actually a bit of a trend of all these Google's communication apps. They're getting tweaked icons. They're kind of looking the same. I'm not sure if that's just the nature of material theme, but
yeah, I think it is.
It makes you wonder why they shouldn't just build one app that does all these things. Makes you wonder.
I think there's good arguments for keeping... I mean, look at the cluttered mess that Hangouts became and how much trouble they went through with trying to put all this stuff in the same app.
Yeah, that's big.
I think there's a lot of arguments for keeping this as separate as possible. Google Duo added Material Theme, and Google Phone got a Material Theme, and Google Contacts. So those were the three other apps besides Android Messages that they got Material Google Material Theme redesigns this week. Other non-Material Theme news this week, Google One finally went public. So Google One's been in beta since I.O. You had to sign up for an email invite for a while, and then it became a public testing or public beta for a little while longer. And now it seems to me, I mean, I think maybe it's like a slow rollout, but Google has announced, and I can attest to this, that Google One has been opened up publicly for anyone who wants to sign up. For those who don't know, Google One is just a rebrand of Google Drive storage, basically. So like you can buy a Google One package now, which is like you get a certain amount of Google Drive storage. I think 100 gigs for $2 is the baseline entry. And then you also get some other perks along with that, which is what makes it Google One and not just Google Drive storage. So you get I think $5 right now. It's like $5 Google Play credit. Everyone gets that when they sign up.
There's a hotel perk.
Yeah, there's a hotel perk thing when you book through Google. And then there's so Google announced this week that Google Store and Google Express deals will also be coming. So I'm assuming we'll see something like, 100% off of your next pair of Google Pixel Buds. stuff like that. And then the other thing is with Google One, you get support. So that's a big deal. I mean, I've talked about this a bit, but, Google One is the first time we've really seen publicly available support for Google's apps and services. And so if you have Google One, you can just chat up with someone. And this goes back to, so consumer support kind of goes back to the original Pixel, which launched with support in the Settings app.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't on the Pixel anymore, correct?
It is.
Okay, sorry.
It's there.
It's not in the same place though. It's like, it used to be like two tabs at the top of the Settings app, and you used to be able to, I don't know.
Yeah, now it's very important.
But now, Google One, you get support for everything. So I'm assuming maybe this feature kind of came out of that work that Google did with the original Pixel. And then this week, Google Voice also was tweaked on iOS.
And Android, so just in the past 24 hours. So
oh, yeah, that's right.
Basically, at CloudNext, Google announced that Voice is becoming a part of G Suite enterprise features. But for most of us who have regular Google accounts, the most notable thing is they moved around the navigation tabs. They added a new contacts one. They added a new icon, and that's about it. Honestly, it's compared to like where we were like a few years ago. It's nice that Google Voice is getting active updates again. So maybe Material Themes next, but
yeah,
very much appreciate the Google Voice users out there that it's getting actively updated.
Right. And then I guess the other last couple notable stories this week before we wrap up the show, Sean revisited the Essential Phone and wrote it a little bit of a love letter. And then today, our friend Andy Rubin actually shared the post on, well, the Essential account shared it and Andy retweeted it. So apparently he appreciated that. Basically the big story is that Essential has been killing it with software updates since day one. And a lot of other things like the camera have kind of been slowly worked out. It's still not as good a camera as the Pixel, but a lot of things have a lot of those rough edges have been ironed out at this point. And so even today, even with Essential having announced essentially that that they're not doing a second phone, they're still killing it with updates, and that's still a really big selling point. And Sean apparently still recommends it to people. which
I'm
is
still toying with buying, like, as from buying just that hardware. It is beautiful, gorgeous hardware.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those collectible items. If Essential,
absolutely.
If Essential doesn't, you know, do a second one, at least it's definitely going to be one of those collector's items. And then there was the drama with supposed work on a Chinese search engine that came out of the Intercept. Was that last week or this week? I can't remember.
That was 2 weeks ago. That was the month.
Okay. So 2 weeks ago, there was the initial report, and now this week we're seeing the fallout from it. Googlers intent, unsurprisingly, petitioning internally against this. I don't know.
Yeah. We don't have time to go on an ethics and moral discussion, but in summary, so Google is apparently making a censored Chinese search engine that follows rules established by the Chinese government on censorship, and other products for the Chinese market, like Google News. It seems like a Google News kind of like product, and this was kept in the dark. Google did their best to lock this down to a few employees and teams, and they told the people working on it to keep quiet. And what we're seeing this week with the petition is that the employees want more transparency. They want to know what's going on in the company, which is, I think, a Google-specific thing with their open culture, very open culture. But yeah, basically, this petition asks for transparency into what the company is working on and to conduct an ethical review of making a censored search engine. And this is going to be a story for weeks and weeks to come about whether Google returns to China, and I'm sure we'll have much more to discuss if anything happens.
Yeah, and I guess the last little fun tidbit on that was the reporter who wrote the story for The Intercept actually noted that the code name for the project, Dragonfly, is the same as the name of Google co-founder, now Alphabet exec, Sergey Brin's huge yacht. It's like one of the fastest motor yachts in the world, apparently. And it's worth $80 million. And I guess the connection there is that Sergey was kind of part of, back in the day, whenever Google pulled out of China, he was part of that decision. And so,
Because of his background, he and his family left the Soviet Union, and he knows firsthand experience with what living under a communist regime is like. So he, in 2010, he took it very personally that Google should not engage in this behavior after it emerged that the accounts of Chinese activists, the Gmail accounts of Chinese activists, were hacked by state actors, it appeared.
Yeah, and then Google had a town hall and basically said, chill out, guys.
They had to cut short the meeting because it was getting live tweeted by several journalists.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. That's not a common occurrence. Actually, that's one of the interesting things about this is that it's one of those things that's like almost impossible to keep under wraps because it's a sensitive subject. So even the most like highest of integrity type people who would be the last people to leak something, their integrity and their convictions are actually so high that they do leak it. Yeah, exactly. So maybe we'll see more leaks in the coming weeks and months about this and see how the story develops. This has been a pretty good show. I think we've covered a lot of ground here, talking about hardware and just working our way up in the next couple months towards Google's presumably October 4th event. But until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning on all your favorite podcasting platforms like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Abner for joining me once again.
Bye.
See you next week.